Are y'all ready?
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this?
Don't. No, stop. Please. You've already been singing show tunes.
Hello and welcome to The Dirt. I'm Tim Wright and today I'm here with Steve Hickey.
Hey, Tim.
What the hell's your problem?
Don't worry about it, Tim. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm also here with Mark Grambo.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I've got my shit together, so there's that.
Mark, you're such a delight compared to Steve.
That's what I like to hear.
Thanks.
And I'm also here with special guest Aaron Draplin. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, fellas. Thank you for having me.
So we're doing a series on shaping your career. Basically, you know, we're talking to some very successful folks in targeted areas in the industry. And Aaron, we wanted to talk to you specifically because you're running Draplin Design Company. And from what I can tell, you basically do whatever you want and it's always awesome and people love it. Is that correct?
All according to plan. I mean, perception's one thing and reality's a whole other ball of wax. And, you know, I've been able to get away with a lot of cool stuff, but you know, yesterday I was working on, typography for my buddy's skillet company, Finex Skillets here in town. And, that was a little challenging. And if that's like the worst of my job, and it's not, you know, cause it's just tough. You really got to focus. You know, maybe a month ago I was doing backstage passes and signage for a music event. And that was rough because there was, you know, 80 things to make, 80 files to deal with, 80 something, you know. But, you know, I always have this ability to step back from and go, wait a second, this is rough. This is not rough. Yep. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to kind of answer that, yeah, you know, I've been really, really lucky to, curate and cultivate this weird little thing where, the calls I'm getting, you know, are right sort of in the wheelhouse for me. And then, sort of being able to handle all their requests. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you get the kid gloves where they're like, well, we only want you to do the logo. We only want you to do the upper, you know, the art direction or something. I'll say, you guys just send me the whole mess. I'll do all of it. Cause I'm trained that way. And you're not going to get a lot of hemming and hawing. And when it's time to hammer, I know how to hammer. You know what I mean?
I hear you. I mean, it sounds like it's a great perspective on life when, you know, so a lot of people that we talk to in the industry, you know, we're changing the world one pixel at a time or something. And you know what? It's not that serious usually.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a logo or it's just something cool that we get to do because it's awesome. You know, when I started, this was a hobby for me and then it turned into a career.
See, that you're taking the words out of my mouth what is it with the kids? Listen, I'm pretty good at doing all the little questionnaires, you know, who write me and say, can we interview you from my school, blah, 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 blah. But you know what I do? I cut and paste shit because, they're cutting and pasting the questions. I might as well cut and paste the answers. Screw it. But I have some beautiful articulate answers. And one of the answers is, you know, how did you get into design? It's like, it's the same old canned answer of like, it was a hobby before. It was ever anything to make money, you know? I just love to make this stuff. And that's because, you know, it's that conundrum of, well, how are you going to get a job if you don't have work to show and vice versa, you know? But it's kind of like, I just didn't really even care about that. It was fun to make things. It was fun to perpetuate something small. And it was subversive. Take something small and make it big, at least level the playing field. That's what I love about the design that I get to do probably 9 out of 10 times here is like right now I'm working on probably the biggest project of my life. Right?
The Dirt.
This podcast, yeah.
Listen, you guys, we got Ira Glass over there. We got Lakshmi Singh over there. And then we got Terry Gross. So listen, I know this is my big moment. I'm trying not to screw it up. But what was the question again? Something important. Oh, the biggest project of my life. I mean, the idea that I'm working for something I can't talk about due to a PDF NDA about an inch thick. But they're the biggest thing in the world, and you can have an idea of what I'm talking about. But that's the one out of like 10. Mm. 9 of those things that I work on are for something crusty and small, right? And I love the power of good design to help something small become something kind of bigger, you know? That's a big part of what I do. I'm open to doing a job for no money because I can do it quick or because it's just fun to do. You know what I mean? That's weird because, you know, like what you were saying about how, like, people, I don't know, I always hear people complain a lot about their jobs, which is just amazing to me. I complain like a human being, but I'm also pretty good at, like, stepping back and being like, today's a rough day because I have a list this long, you know, and then today's an easy day because my list is a little bit shorter. But in the end, it's all graphic design, or it's all making things for friends, or it's all doing something creative with my day. You know, like, that's, talk about perspective, man. I can't shake that shit. So, you know, the idea that, like, when I'm punched in here, it's a blurry line between working and, you know, just really purely wanting to be here. There is really no difference. You know,
when did you make that jump into, you know, when did you start the design company and you decided that you wanted to do stuff on your own?
Well, it was about 2002, 2003, but I think it was 2004. But see, the thing is it was just one guy I talked to in Portland who said, you know, your output and your attitude, you don't have to be at a studio. And that was just, it was a revelation because it was like, well, what do you mean? You know, I thought that studios provide you like insurance and a steady job and, you know, I don't know, you know, like 401ks and stuff, because that's what you're trained. But, you know, when I saw one example and basically I said, you know, I work out of my home, I raise my children, I wear what I want, I wake up when I want, I stop when I want. I mean, it was basically, it was really like, it was like an elixir because it just made me stop and go, oh, of course you can do that, you know, but you need things called clients and you need stuff called work, you know, and things. So what I had was I had one foot in the freelance already. And things were getting bigger and bigger. And then one foot in like being able to do a 9-to-5 or job, or we'll say a 10-to-8 or 10-to-11 or 10-to-7. Like if they want me to work late, I would work late. No problem. I'm a Midwesterner and you don't really challenge that stuff. You know, this idea of like, I'm here too late and I'm mad about it. I just didn't really, I mean, if you get frisky, but it's like, you're just lucky to even have a job. Why rock the boat kind of shit, you know? So, you know, You see an example of someone doing it, and then you have clients that are saying, "Hey, we'll give you some work if you make this." You put your feelers out there. Everything lined up, and I went for it. You know, that was 2004, and basically I had about $25,000 saved, which was like I bought a house with that $25,000. I had maybe a year of rent figured out. You know, but I had to save that first before I jumped out. You know, it's not like you just kind of go. Have some formula, like, you know, I'm from the Midwest and you plan and you worry and you freak out. And then, you know, worrying is an art form where I'm from, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's good, but it's great to hear that stuff. Cause you know, you talk to a lot of people who have gone down similar paths as yourselves and they've just, when you ask them how they did it, they're like, oh, I just made the leap.
What I have a hard time is when people, there's a confidence or there's a cocksure quality to someone when they say, oh yeah, I just jumped out of my own. Like I was afraid.
Yeah.
But I knew that if I had X amount of, if I had $8,000 in the bank, that was 1 year of rent at my house, you know, they gave me a year to try it and a year to go back if it didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there was a plan in place and I'm pretty transparent about that, you know?
And I think there's a bit of a, I don't know if it's just American culture mythology of the like the lone hero. We want to, you know, we still want to believe in the person who just sort of like goes and, oh yeah, I'm a self-made man, I'm a self-made woman, that I just went out and did this on my own. And in fact, no, you know, most people, you can trace your success to a support system, you can trace your success to the world that you were in, to the clients that you had, to the family, to the friends that you had to build and get you there, to the infrastructure, to the roads, to FedEx, to whatever it may have been.
And even just the act of planning. I mean, so many people will say that, like, oh yeah, I just made it work. But they don't want to sit there and admit that like there was deliberation and that sense of fear. They don't want other people to know that it took effort.
Yeah. And the fact is that most overnight successes, even if the story is really sexy to say, oh, yeah, and one day we just made it. Most overnight successes are 15 years in the making, right? It's the hard work and it's the time that builds you up there. And
well, I mean, like, you know, something changed at the end of the 90s, you know, where you had to be in a studio. You could work from the road with the internet being at hotels. You could suddenly work from your house because the internet could come to your house. You know what I mean? There's something shifted there, but it took a couple of years for people to get sort of comfortable with it. and realize that the power in your fingertips can be applied in a lot of different ways. You know, I was afraid. The word afraid comes up too many times, but it's like I was more afraid to be somewhere that I would get caught in. Yeah. You know, that's what made me want to get out, because I just saw the cycles of this stuff. And some people are okay. You know, it's like it suddenly turns into this shit where you throw your old employer under the bus. That's never the case. It just wasn't for me. Some people are really good in that environment of taking, you know, account managers and taking notes and having lots of meetings and lots of phone calls and shit. I just saw that, like, you know, over the course of a day, you would basically work about 3 hours. And like, what about the other 5 hours? And we're playing fucking ping pong. And, you know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of weird. You know, it's like, it's okay. But when I got out, and I had my 8 hours or 10 hours or 15 hours or all day to work, I got a lot of stuff done. Like, I got a load done. And that's, I was more productive. I was more comfortable. And then I could make more cash. First year out, 3 times my wage.
Whoa.
And that was because I took every job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And then there wasn't, like, you know, someone taking the lion's share. It was right here.
Yeah.
And these weren't a lot of money. It was just stacking a lot of little stuff up on top of each of itself to become this wobbly thing. And that's been the going rate for the last, you know, 11 years.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think a lot of the anxiety in people, you know, going independent is the clients.
Along with that question, I know a lot of folks hope that they're going to, you know, they're going to scrounge and they're going to scrape and they're going to find little clients, and they're waiting for their like Oprah moment or their Martha Stewart moment or whatever, where they get their one big piece of exposure that just takes it away from them and they never have to worry again because, well, you know, Oprah discovered me and now I will never have to work again. I will never have to, not that I will never have to work, but I'll never have to hunt again. Everything will come to me. And I'm curious about where, what your path has looked like. Has it stayed a big pile of small jobs? Has it switched to a smaller plate of bigger jobs? And was there any inflection point, or was it sort of a slow evolution?
Well, I mean, that first year, you know, like word of mouth travels real quick. You know, I've had a website since 97. You know, it's not any marvel of technology, but I've had a website since 97. So it's like, you know, I've been sharing dead links and dead images and dead fun stuff, you know, like for years. So people kind of knew, and then, you know, they, you know, because there was an interaction back and forth, right when I got out of, you know, my first studio job, people would contact me. They felt like they kind of knew me, because it really was one-to-one, like, that's what I'm interested in, that's what I put on my site, that's this daily thing. You know, when I think back, it's like, how did you get clients? Well, you know, you do one good job, and someone says, talk to this guy, and that's really the answer for that, you know? And that was inside snowboarding. To the point where, you know, I had 7 or 8 or maybe 10 clients all in snowboarding, but my heart wasn't in it anymore. But I had wonderful inventions and retainers, like Cole Headwear. We started that in my basement. My buddy Brad Schaffel and I started that. He brought the idea. I helped him with the graphics. He took it back to Seattle. That is a real company, you know, 10, 11 years later now, 12 years later, a real thing that's really happening, right? Just a couple months later, we started Union Binding Company, which is snowboard bindings. I worked each of those for 10 years, and those retainers every year grew $5,000, $10,000, couple grand, and to the point where, you know, two of them was a nice year designing, right? So it's like, now you take those two retainers, this is about 2008, and so I'm about 5 or 6 years into it. You take two retainers and stack those. You take a little bit of Field Notes cash, stack that. That year I did 45 logos. Right? So that some are $1,000 and some are $8,000.
Yeah.
And then you stack that shit and then you put all the other bullshit I worked on and then a bunch of DDC merch and then you have a big goddamn year. So you evolve up to that point where you're like, suddenly you stop and you go, I made how much?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hustled for it.
Yeah.
Then whatever. So I reached a peak and now I'm on the sort of a thing where I'm coming down and it's like, I'm doing less and less client work. Merch has, it's still all going up. Merch is exploding. Field Notes is going completely bonkers. And yes, the jobs are getting bigger and I'm doing less of them, but I'm still working as much as possible. You know, like last night I was working on Finex stuff. I was painting a sign for, we're going to a craft festival, you know, this weekend here in town. So my hands are in a lot of different things, you know. And then, oh yeah, this whole goddamn summer I've been working on a book. and I'm not really supposed to talk about it, and I'm not going to announce nothing, but I'm making a book. I got a book deal, and it's going to be a whole real fucking book coming in about 8 months. And so I've been doing that too. Like, what is your list today, Boston? You're doing we're making some code for some goddamn rehubulator on the model the fucking
that's exactly what's on my list.
Hotwired speak and spell or whatever the hell is coming out from, you know, I don't know. What
you
the
just
hell, Samsung equipment, whatever. I'm just kind of riffing. I'm kind of riffing. But these lists are long.
Yeah.
You know, and I come in and I'll have 20 things that I'll do in a day. 20 things, you know, and it's so, I just love it because at the end of the day, if I have something like that, that all the stuff that I checked off in my field notes, like I got the buzz of being productive, I got the buzz of making a living, and I got the buzz of doing it like totally comfortable in my own like zone, you know? So I don't know, you know, it's weird to me how, you know, this is going all the way back to like the perception of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I mean, the jobs are getting bigger because I'm getting some more high profile stuff calling me, but I've also let some of that stuff go because I just knew that, you know, there's some math to that shit. Here's some math for you guys. Just so you know, I'm a Delta Diamond Flyer. Okay. I don't want to brag, but I will. I'll put it out there. And you know, you ought to see me in that first class. It is a beautiful sight. A lot of man, a lot of mass, large man in a large seat. My favorite hashtag when I'm traveling is large man in a small seat because it's not fun to be, you know, back in there with the hay and the fucking circus animals and shit. But when I get, you know, to be in that new sort of zone, I'm losing my train of thought. Okay, listen, when you're in the when you're in the Delta Diamond Sky Club, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
This is an equation. The larger the pleat of pant times the louder the bullshit business call equals bigger the douchebag. There you go. Okay? So
I fly Southwest.
That's perfect.
Oh, yeah. So you're in those, like, you know what? I got all excited because now I get to go on the Delta Sky Club. And you know what? I don't even go anymore, man, because you just got some turd named, no offense to guys named Steve, but
of course.
You got some guy pacing, saying, you know, we're just going to, you know, round, you know, all those like dumb business terms and shit. And you know, he's so loud. And he's got like a golf shirt on or something. And like, dude, they're just like, unforgettable. And then I'm the one being eyeballed because, you know, I'm wearing shorts.
You're the oddity.
Or I'm wearing a t-shirt that says Oregon or whatever. You know, it's like, it's weird to get inside those places. So I don't even remember the equation I was going after. It doesn't even matter. But, you know, we'll just leave you with that. Larger the pleat, etc. So.
All right.
That's perfect. I bet you could sell that.
Yeah, it's going in the book.
Awesome.
That's some of the advice going back to the retainers plus field notes plus the small logos plus everything that adds up that I have figured out over time, and I want to go back and shout at everyone at art school and say, you know, diversify your income, whatever it may be. It's that notion that the life of the artist now, whether you're a designer, you're an illustrator, you're a photographer, whatever it may be, is multiple streams of revenue. You know, learning how to use your skills in myriad ways and A, as a way to not be dependent on any one thing, but also to explore, because you're going to find new things that you love and that can really, truly support you.
Well, what was the thing I remember when I got out of school? There was some little quip 40 years ago, you'd have one job for 40 years, then you would be 60 and kind of jump out, you know, and have a nice retirement for 25 years or something, or 20 years or whatever it was. But then, you know, when I got out of school, you know, 98 and started to work, you know, the little thing that I heard was about, you know, you'd have like 11 different jobs over the course of your lifetime. And that really kind of sounded exciting to me, you know, because, you know, I've seen my uncles work at, you know, GM for like, you know, 38 years or 40 years or something, you know, and then finally they were kind of pushed out, you know, they were kind of like, some of these guys were like made to retire and stuff, you know. And it's, you know, that's okay. That's a different way of doing things. I don't know. You know, I just like the idea of like, see, when you move out west, when you're a little punk kid and you realize this is my rent, this is what it costs for, you know, groceries, and here's what my snowboard pass, that's my budget. And you work within your budget. You have a wonderful life because you're, you know, you have something overhead, you have something in your, you know, in the gullet, and then you have, you know, some entertainment to go be a snowboarder, whatever, some fun. I learned to work within that when I was 19 years old. So then when you get out to this point, when it's time to go on your own, you do this assessment there, you know, I need health insurance. I need this. I need that. And I figured all of that shit out. It wasn't that rough to meet those criteria. That's not what people would tell you. You know, you could do that with a $30,000 a year job. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like today, mm-hmm. you can do it. What I could do that with $30,000 a year. Now, not to be weird, but when you add a zero to that shit, that doesn't mean that I just added a zero to how I operate the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I save money. I pay a fuckload of taxes. I take care of my mom and my girl and my little sister and shit buddies and stuff and have loans and whatever, because, you know, as things have grown, I've kind of stayed in the same mindset of being frugal.
Yeah.
You know, because really in the end, what matters? Is it awards? Hell no. And we don't need to go down that thing because they just become sound bites. But it's like, that's what people are worried about. You know, it's like, man, that's never, ever, ever mattered to me. What's mattered to me is being able to love the project so I do a good job. Because when you don't do a good job, you don't get a job back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's mutual that, like, the more comfortable I was, the better I could work, mm-hmm. and the more jobs you got. You know what I mean?
So when you know, you first start out, everything's all new and exciting and fun. How do you keep the work fun for you?
Well, I mean, a new project's a new project. Like, I'm doing a record for these guys called Bel Adair down in Northern Alabama. And, like, mm-hmm. like, they sent me the record, and I just like the record.
Yeah.
And I mean, to broker a deal with these guys, you know, with a band, it's just one of these things where it's like, how much was your phone bill? What do you mean you guys can't scrape up $200 a piece to make it $1,000? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To pay, you know. And I just kind of, in the end, I just liked their record, and it was just like, screw it. I'll just do the job. I don't even, if you guys can come up with money, great. I'm already losing money just taking the project on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's like, I like making records. I like that stuff. So that's fun out of the get-go. The job I'm working on right now, that is a rough job for a big, 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 I can't talk about it, company. You know, it's just, it's not that it's hard. It's just, it's taken too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's way beyond fun. It's work, you know, and it's not that rough. It's just hard to be able to, like, stop the trade of everything growing and exploding around me and say, okay, now I'm doing a day of just, like, hammering on this, because everything's colliding and the planets align for that 1 second, and they get ready and they give me this stuff and I have 8 hours to do it. It's hard to stop all the other fun around you. But see, that's part of being responsible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not necessarily about keeping it fun. It's more like, all this stuff is pretty cool, you know? And even at the worst of it, it's just realizing, like, now you just got to put a couple records on and focus, turn all this other bullshit off. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many little things that are distractions, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff, websites, things, friends, people, voices. And you got to turn all that shit off and just hammer. I'm pretty good at that, because that's called being, like, responsible.
Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty neat job if you can just sit down and do it for a while.
Like, the moment that I feel a little freaked out about something, I'll stop and go tinker on whatever I'm working on for some little dumb fun thing.
Yeah.
And then you get your buzz there. I'll never make a penny on these stupid highlighters I'm holding in my hand right now that you can buy in pretty big quantities at draplin.com. You can buy these there. It's a fucking good value. Great for the UX community. This is enough for me to get a little buzz.
Yeah.
And then I get this out of the way and I go back. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I don't force that on the stuff that makes me the dollars, you know? I don't know. That's a weird one. It's interesting, because I don't know if I'm necessarily entitled to it all being fun. You know, who is?
Well, would you say that the, you know, as your career has matured and you get the larger and larger projects, do they allow you to do more of the fun stuff? Because you can get that big project and you're like, okay, well, I can actually do a fun project now, because I don't, you know, I had just had an influx of cash or something.
No, I mean, like I said, I've always found my buzz on things that have nothing to do with the clients, you know, because it was fun to start Coalheadware or start Union, but 1 year later, you know, you get a list of projects, you are working.
Yeah.
You know, you're working. That's all behind you. It was fun to invent it. So then I would invent a hat or field notes or whatever the hell, and that's where I got my buzz, you know? So it's like, okay, listen, here's the equation. The larger the client, it's not necessarily the less fun you're going to have. There's just no room for that. There's too many people fretting things. There's too many people worrying about emails and times.
The harder you're going to have to work to find the fun.
Well, yeah, it's just not really in there. And that's okay. It's called, now you're going to make some good cash.
Yeah.
So have your shit together to make some good cash. You know, I mean, that's just called being, getting a good job. You know, I mean, it's like the bigger the job, I've learned this lesson 50 times, doesn't necessarily mean the better, even if you make right. more cash, because listen, mm-hmm. there's a sweet yeah. spot where you give back half of it to Uncle Sam.
Yeah. yeah.
And that hurts. And listen, I like to think that it's building homes for people who don't have homes.
Yeah.
I like to think it's building roads that I drive on, but I know they're dropping bombs on developing countries with it and shit. I mean, that hurts.
Yeah.
Because I just give so much of it back. So I'm working less that I don't have to pay as much kind of taxes. And you know what? Basically, it's distilling down to like, I ship a lot of merch.
Mm.
I make fun stuff. I sell a bunch of merch. I make field notes and work with Jim and all the crew and make field notes. And then I do some logos and records. And that's what I'll do for the year of 2015. Wait, and make a book. And make a book. But you know what I mean? It's like, that is a killer fucking life. Yeah, I mean, you know, I watched my dad growing up.
Yeah.
He was a salesman.
Mm.
And he, you know what? He never really made a lot. But he loved going and talking to those guys. He covered the bases at the house, you know, and kept everything cool, you know, as like a traditional role of being a provider.
Mm.
There were three, I have two sisters, but as my dad used to say, he has three kids, one of each. Yeah. That's where you guys are supposed to all laugh. Yes, okay. Now, okay. So
we can edit in some louder laughing later if you want, just to really land it.
You know, there's a direct, the lesson I got from my dad was like, if you enjoy your work, it'll all kind of work out.
Yeah.
You know, too many guys have jobs they hate and they don't want to be there. And it's hard to make that buck, you know? And there was just something I brought into my life through that was just basically like, I don't care how much money you make. If you hate making it the way you're making it, it's not going to be good for you.
Yeah.
You know, the end. And I started to taste that. And you know, this idea of having your shit together. I mean, what if it didn't work out well? And I'm in this really fun spot right now. But it worked out well enough to where I was making $66,000 a year or something, which I make it sound like it's bad. But you know what? That's a good living, and I still would have saved money, and I still would have been able to pay all my bills and my insurance and put away 401ks and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I still would have, because that's what it was 10 years ago. It was 65 grand, and I had money left over.
Yeah.
You know, I knew how to do it. And still, that's how I bought a house, you know? So it's kind of like that's the success word. It's just, I don't know if that, you know, successful sounds such, it's, you know, it was successful for me to make a living. That was enough for me. Just to make a living and keep my bills paid. Once I got that credit card paid off in 2002, because I had a credit card from school and Alaska and a bunch of other yeah. shit, and that was just like 10 grand. And how you ever, you know, when your profit for the course of a year is $3,000, how are you going to pay off 10 grand? You're not. You know what I mean? So that's where I started taking more and more freelance on, and that's how I got out of that hole. That was the first one.
Yeah.
Second one was buying a house, paying for it, and then I paid off my school loans in about 2009. I paid off the house in 2010, paid off the Volvo in 2011 or whatever the hell. I went and paid cash for my Volvo. They wouldn't even let you, because then it turns into this big transaction for the IRS and shit. But here's a little pro tip for you guys. When you go out to like a, you know, listen, when I walked in, they looked at me and the guy was like, "Huh, you're here to see the Volvos, huh? Blah, blah, blah." Like he totally sized me up like you're in over your head kind of shit. And I was like, "I don't know. We took a wrong turn. We just thought we'd come and look at them, whatever." I knew exactly what I wanted. He didn't know that I had $40,000 in cash in my back pocket. He didn't know this. And I worked him down from the sticker price
yeah.
to the retail price to the, you get your uncle's deal from Ford's out of Detroit, you know, all this kind of shit, down to where they're like chopping. That car was $44,000. I got it down to like 37.5 or something. I don't even know what it was. They're throwing in moonroofs and shit. And I, you know, because the APR was something like, I was like, you know, 5 years. Well, can't you do it up to 6 years? Oh, we can do it to 6 years. I think it was 7 years at $700 or $800 a month. So that means, based on the paper at that point, they're going to make like $23,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's sitting like, there cackling all, to himself, and then, like, and then the how guy, much money I made like, on this guy.
He goes to the manager, he does, blah, 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 and the price keeps coming down. Yeah. We lock in on the price. We're going to finance. I had, when my credit score came back as good, 8. 30 or whatever, the guy was like, well, what about, and I said, well, I've just been really lucky. You know, that was like the first thing when he was kind of like, huh, you know? And then he, you know, they signed the thing, he gave me the paper, and I go, well, how can I pay? And he says, well, we're going to finance it. I go, he goes, well, you can pay, you know, if you got it, you can pay with cash. I go, so I pull the cash out, slam it on the table, and I go, I'll just pay with cash. And he just has this look like, you son of a, you know, you can pay with a check. You can't pay with a credit card. But the idea was, I let him size me up as being, you know, a little out of my league or something. And I probably even was. But it was just kind of like, I let him size me up. I knew I'd saved for that car for 3 or 4 years, you know. And then to go in there, you know, I got a better deal. That's probably the same deal anyone else would have got. But it was like, if you just walked in and said, here's the cash, it'd be $44,000.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that's all right. They would know how to attack you in a different way. Mm-hmm. That's been a lot of the way I've looked at all this stuff. You know, when I bought a house, I didn't think you'd pay it off. Why would you? That's crazy. You know, I didn't even know you could pay it off. I thought there'd be a penalty. And the girl looked at me like, of course you can. You know, of course you can. You know, I just didn't even, because she kind of knew me. She was like, of course you can, honey. Just pay it. And you're going to be so much freer today. And I haven't had a cent of debt. And I can't even remember. You know, I just stay on top of it now, you know.
Yeah.
And it's I don't want to say it's freedom because I have bills like every single other person, but that was a big, big, big part of being able to say, I'll do whatever the hell I want because I own the house, I own the Volvo, I own my appendix, I own my appendix. Okay, I paid it off. So all these years later, you know, this idea of like that focus has just shifted to like, you know, helping people around me. Because I don't really need a lot more, you know, and yet it's hard to stop the momentum because then, you know, I take care of my mom with some of this shit and help other people. And it's like, then I want to stop and slow down just so I can focus on just me, you know, like just getting smaller or getting healthier or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, it's hard to stop that shit. That's kind of where I'm at now. You know, that's where I'm, you know, the focus is shifting to is like, slowing it all down.
What I like about this is that, you know, it's kind of, I think, feel like it's showing our listeners that, you know, you can do your own thing. It's not magic. It's, you know, if you plan right, you work hard, it'll be okay. And you can actually enjoy what you do. I think that's the message that I'm getting.
I mean, it's perspective, man. Here's the deal. Anybody who's right now coding while they're listening to this bullshit, remember something. You are coding for a living.
Aaron just called our show bullshit, by the way.
I'll go a little deeper than that. Uh-oh. What a waste of my life sitting here. No. No, listen. Right now, if you're sitting here, you know, if you're listening to this stuff and you're clean and you're working on a Macintosh and you're working for, it might be, I don't know, what's the worst job in the world? Something for pharmaceutical. I don't know, some weird shit like this. You're coding something. Remember, you're not outside working, like digging a ditch.
Yeah.
You know, that's something we all need to keep in perspective. And I know I joke about that because I've had the jobs where I've had a foreman grab me by the chest and like take my shirt and threaten to kick my ass.
Holy shit.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In some coding firm.
Like you got to dig a few ditches to figure that out.
You know, that when that happens, you're just like, I'll never go back to that world. First of all, he assaulted me, but that doesn't, there's no assault charges in the backwoods of Michigan. You know what I mean? It just kind of happened. And I was big enough and sort of scared enough and strong enough to tell him to go fuck himself or whatever it was. But that's a different kind of language and sort of anthropology of how you work. That's how people work all day long. It's just having the perspective to say, getting to do what you want or whatever. Like if you are paying for yourself with anything creative, just remember that you're pretty lucky, you know? And that's what I always try to remember. Cause listen, man, I go to these UX conferences to be like the bluster. I go to these design conferences. I go to schools. I do my little talk and I talk to people. And when I talk to people that have nothing to do with making little logos like I do, you guys make code. That's a different thing. It's a different thing. But we share a common bond, which is like, we all want to do something we love and make a living. That doesn't, I mean, if the guy who's digging a ditch loves what he's doing and is really healthy, that's a good living, you know? But if you don't understand or don't know how to see the perspective that we're lucky to be doing this stuff, be it code or design or whatever, you know, then you're missing out on something, because we are, you know, we're lucky to be alive right now. I mean, you guys understand even one millionth the scale of the universe. You have no idea how big it is right now. Boston, do you even understand that? I mean, here's a question for you guys. Does the universe have an edge? Discuss.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know, right?
We'll discuss that on next week's episode when we have Neil deGrasse Tyson on as our guest. You can book that, right, Tim? You can make that happen?
We've been trying to get Elon Musk for like 2 years now, so.
What a cool name. It sounds like some kind of an animal. Okay, yesterday I had to go up Sandy Boulevard here in Portland, and it was really frustrating because I left at about 3:45 and didn't get up there. I mean, this is only about 4 miles as the crow flies. Didn't get up there until about 4:15. That's a half hour of lights and bullshit, and that's frustrating. And then you're just losing time sitting in your car. That's frustrating. But when you step all the way back and kind of go, wow, the nearest star to us is 80,000 years away, traveling 40,000 miles an hour as a satellite. That's how long it's gonna take that little thing to go past the nearest star. Then you just stop and kind of go, man, none of this shit really matters. You know, I'm alive, yes. I'm living, I'm breathing, I'm in traffic, I've got tunes, I've got air conditioning somewhere because of the air conditioning. A polar bear cub is on a little piece of ice floating away from its mom on a larger piece of ice. I mean, there's sort of implications to this stuff, but it's like, I don't know, you know, it's like I just have this weird ability to stop myself and go, before you cry, size up how lucky you got it.
Yeah.
And that just goes back to like having jobs that you hate your life for like 10 hours a day. You know, I've had some of those jobs, and it only took a couple to make me realize I'm going to work hard when I get the opportunity to work hard, which was, you know, be it analog for on my own. Okay, I'm doing the book, right? I'm doing the book. And I went back into the past and I talked to this one guy who was like, you know, all you ever did, you know, at night was work. Like it was a bad thing. You know, and I looked at him and I said, of course I worked, man. It was the first bit of the iceberg to try to get something bigger going.
Yeah.
You know, you guys just went and drank. I mean, so what if I, you know what I mean? It's like,
yep.
You know, it's like, it's, I don't want to say it's persecution, but you know, I got kind of messed with because I had a focus. And that's, you just got to like shake that shit off.
Yeah. I think maybe it's because so many people lack that focus.
Well, right. I mean, my nickname was Dark Cloud because they would come in my room and open the door and they would look and they'd say, ooh, the forecast looks pretty dark. And I'd be like, too much light. Shut the door.
So I know, you know, you did the ditch digging jobs, you know, you did the
couple. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. You end up in agency on your own. And I know that art school, I think I was reading your interview on Great Discontent. I know it was not, you know, right out of high school and into art school. It was something that came a few years later. I'm curious about your perspective on the difference it made or it didn't make, and what you'd say to a young designer starting out or a high schooler considering, is this something I should do? What has the role been of the formal art education been in your life?
Well, see, I went out of a place of fear. I thought you had to go.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have this sort of accreditation, they wouldn't take you seriously, which is complete bullshit.
Yep.
You know, the answer always is, if you can go, go. In my predicament, I was lucky to get a big old scholarship. Lucky. I was lucky to have work that I did on my own that somehow got me in. And then I had 2 years that I took off from having to work for a living to go to school. It was a wonderful, wonderful scenario, you know, and it's worth its weight in gold. But on the other hand, I've seen other guys that are just self-taught. You know, if you got to go to art school, well, you're lucky then. We're lucky, you know. If you didn't have those resources, do not be the kid that I met from SCAD who came up to me and said, I don't really even like this kind of work. And I said, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to pay off? I mean, how much are you in the hole? And the kid says, I'm about $140,000 in the hole. I said, holy shit. How many years of graphic design is going to pay off? And he goes, graphic design? I got a degree in fiber art.
Oh, good like, God.
I mean, that is highway fucking robbery, okay? Yeah. On the part of, you know, some night I spoke there. But that's scary to me.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're a young kid and you're taking a look at this, listen, you can learn a ton of stuff on your own. There are any number of self-taught designers that are doing great work and are out working because it's your book. But if you can go, invest in yourself and go. Because what it did for me was it taught me how to speak about my work, size up contemporary culture, which was going on, what was happening that moment, and what was happening in 1998 was you puke on a page, 19 different bullshit grunge fonts, and then call it postmodern fucking graphic design, which was a pile of stinking, steaming horseshit all these years later. It was fashion, and it was junk. I understand it had to happen. I tried my hand at it for one project and was done. And then I went and looked at Jan Tischold and grids, and that made sense. That will last for a millennia. And this horseshit, I'm sorry, I'm getting excited, Ray Gunn, David Carson bullshit that had to happen. Man. You know, but there's nothing more painful than someone trying to show that shit in their portfolio now because it was basically sprinkling and just, it was just the latest bunch of bullshit. You know, and there's designers that go after that stuff, and there's designers who make stuff to help everybody. You know what I mean? Like, just make design. Because here's the deal. I have just as much respect for the guy who designs a toilet paper wrapper that go around the toilet paper.
Yep.
As I do the guy who gets to work at, like, I don't know, the biggest design firm. It doesn't matter which one that is. It's just the idea that, like, those are both good jobs. Those are both real jobs. You know, to answer your question, go to school if you can. Have a blast, but understand they are going to rip you off for millennia. So just understand when you get done, you have to pay that shit back. School was great because it taught me, you know, what was my place in the little universe of design, and it was a weird little spot. I got made fun of in school because one of my answers for a review when they were looking at my work was, well, what do you want to do with design? And I said, I want to make a living.
Yeah.
And I got made fun of because that person had never worked a big, scary, shitty, tiny, shitty little job. It was all academics. So just be warned that you're going to be up against that shit. You know, my favorite people were the people that had nighttime jobs. Think about that. They had their shit together. Maybe they weren't the cool ones, but 10 years later, they're still working and they're grounded. And they have babies. You know what I mean? There's something about that. And some of these other numbnuts who were like the flash in the pan, whatever, they can't talk about stringing three sentences together. Who gives three words, right? Who cares? You know, I mean, I don't know. The guys I hung out with there, they were working designers. They still are, you know. So anyway, all right, you guys, everything cool.
Yeah.
Make me sound good. Make me sound articulate. Make me sound smart. Everybody go to draplin.com right now. I know you got the money. I know you got it. Go to draplin.com/merch right fucking now. You can get a poster from your state. Okay. When you're done with that, go to fieldnotesbrand.com and just load up. For that upcoming fall, it's things you need, beautifully printed by smart people and out of Chicago, and then sort of designed by an unsmart person in Portland, Oregon. But fieldnotesbrand.com, you need to go there. What else? What else? Oh, man, in about 8 months, just watch Abrams books because there's a DDC book coming. And I don't know. There's some other things I can't talk about, but there's some surprises coming. Just check draplin.com for all the bullshit. And thanks, you guys, for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to chat with us. It was great to talk to someone with such a great perspective on life and career.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You guys, go to the site, pick out some bullshit, and I'll make a care package. And I'm going to charge you guys double because I know you got it. I know you got it. Look at those guitars. Look at those guitars over there, huh?
What you can't see from there is they're squires.
They're squires.
Yeah.
I always have a guitar here, so. Always keep this, you know, close because it's just sort of there's your outro music.
That's awesome. First musical outro live.
All right, get out of here. That's it.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, you guys.
Well, you guys can get us on Twitter at The Dirt Show, and please send your long-winded comments to thedirt@freshtilledsoil.com. Special thanks to our favorite guest, Aaron Draplin. This is a great show. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening, and we will try and do better next time.
Advice for others. What has been the key to staying independent? Okay. A strong family, alcohol. Listen, I don't.
You're not supposed to read our show, Doc.
They'll know. They'll see all the sausage.
This is all off the cuff.
I know. I don't. You know what I like about this Google Doc? Look, watch this. I already did it one time where I wrote, I hate your face in real time, and you guys can see that stuff.
Oh, no. I saw that. That was why I cracked up at the beginning.
You know, fart bubble. com. I don't know.
There
like,
we go. Just save that.
There. You guys can see it come in there. You know, it's like, you know what? Like, you guys are so smart. Like, this thing came in with all the questions and shit. It was really well done. I'm here just to kind of say good job. Because sometimes you jump on these things and people are fumbling through microphones and bullshit. And, the, you know, there's emails about, like, what time to do it. And there's time zones and shit. You guys are pretty – I mean, we've had this plan for, like, 6 years now. But as I look through – I mean, did I miss any questions? I want to get to everything. And I know that we're already – you said you're going to be 20 or – how the fuck are you supposed to pack all these – you guys,
I know.
It's like War and Peace, these questions here. And we're going to do it for 22 minutes. That's just embarrassing. And suddenly your podcast is going to be an hour long.
People come out the other side tired and thirsty and hungry, say, where have I been? How did I get here?